This is Matt Verboys from La La Land Records, and you've entered the La La Land Lounge on Geekcast Radio.
This is Michael McQuistion, and you are listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
Hello, and welcome to a special interview here on Geekcast Radio under our La La Land Lounge banner here on Geekcast Radio. I am your host, Mike TFG1 Blanchard. And today, folks, I wasn't sure how to do this because it happened 4 years ago. The soundtrack score finally came out from La La Land Records. I believe it was last year. It is Time's Up. It is the music from the Griffith Observatory's Samuel Ocean Planetarium. This was a show done in 2012 out there at the Griffith Observatory in Los Angeles. And the music was done by Michael McQuistion. And I got so excited about the title and the fact that Michael's name was on it. And I looked at the cover and I was awesome. And it was awesome. And I didn't really see the fine print at the top, because I'm like, oh, okay, so I can just go online, find this, and because my thing is, I have to be able to watch something like a movie or a TV show or a cartoon. I have to be able to hear the music in context, and I've been sitting on this, and I'm like, how am I ever going to do this? So I figured, folks, for the La La Land Lounge here in Geekcast Radio, the best thing to do was to bring Mr. Michael McQuistion on. Hello, sir.
Hello, everyone.
We also have with us, for the first time ever in Geekcast Radio's 7-year history, we have a doctor with us. We have Dr. Laura Danley. Hello.
Hello, Mike.
And you are the curator, is that correct?
That's correct.
The Griffith Observatory? Okay, I just want to make sure I had that right.
Yeah.
I did read up on you and all that stuff, and I did read the liner notes that come with the soundtrack CD, but I just wanted to make sure I had that right. In the liner notes, if you guys get this soundtrack from La La Land Records, you can read all about the story, about how Time's Up came about. But what I want to do now is I want both of you to tell my listeners what was the inception, how did this start? I believe, Dr. Danley, we should probably start with you, since it was an original planetarium thing at the observatory before Michael came on, correct?
That's correct. We regularly do planetarium shows, new shows, just to keep the lineup, trying to vary. And by regularly, we mean once every couple of years. It's not like the old days when you had a new show every month. Because these days, if you haven't been to a planetarium for a long time, these days, it's quite a different experience. It's not just the star ball and the stars. Most, public planetaria and university planetaria have full dome video. So you're you're making a short film, so short subject film in the world of about 30 to 35 minutes, 4K by 4K. So it's a pretty significant animation undertaking. So in 2012, because of all of those rumors that the universe was going to end, and on December 21st, 2012, we decided to take on that rumor mill and that whole idea from pseudoscience, because there's one every couple of years. The universe is always going to end. So we took that subject on and wrote the planetarium show Time's Up, about the end of the world and how it's actually not the end of the world in 2012. So, of course, we needed a score, and that's where Michael comes in.
Now, how did they approach you, Michael? Was this something that you were interested in doing as soon as you heard about it, or did you know about it beforehand? How did that all come about?
Well, I can say that I was absolutely, definitely interested in it as soon as I heard about it. I mean, what a great opportunity. The interesting thing is that I've known Dr. Daly for a long time, for several years now, and we've been talking about other productions that she'd been involved with before and music for those productions, just little questions about, oh, how do I do this and what should I ask my composer, you know, that kind of thing when we weren't working together. And then when this one came around, we talked again, and, you know, we finally got to the point to where, you know, Dr. Daly asked me, well, are you interested in doing the music for this? And I was sort of, it was funny because I, you know, I didn't want to be too effusive, but I'd been interested in it since I heard about it. And so I finally just was like, yes, yes, I'm very interested in doing the music for this.
And I have to chime in and say that was like, are you kidding me? I never thought in a million years we could get Michael to do our score because he's so busy and he's got all these other things and commitments. So it was the same kind of moment over here.
Well, it was kismet because there happened to be a break in my schedule at that period of time that was about two and a half months, which was exactly the right time for us to do this collaboration. I was absolutely thrilled that I could put my full attention to it.
So basically what you're saying is the whole universe came in alignment for you guys.
That's exactly right. <It's>
perfect, yes.
So tell me what, since I was unable and I didn't know about it at the time, to see the actual show, tell me about the experience of seeing the show with the music and all that stuff. What was that like at the observatory?
Go ahead, Michael.
Well, the only thing I want to say to that question, just to speak to that in a little bit, would be that the only way to see it is at the planetarium.
Right.
And as a composer, I'm so not used to that. You know, I'm used to having something that I can work with. Somebody sends me the picture, I have the picture to work with. It's kind of like what you were talking about being able to see it, and you're just used to that. Mm-hmm. So this was the first time when I really couldn't really see it as it was really going to be, and so I was kind of flabbergasted too. And maybe Dr. Daly, you can tell us about how you set that up for us to be able to work together.
Well, you know, the planetarium environment is an immersive environment. You're in it and you're flying around through space and visiting other planets and so forth. So there really is no way to put the entire thing on a screen. There is a format called Dome Master that's circular that then is, projected onto a hemispheric dome. But a little Dome Master thing, just like when you get a map of the globe that's round and try to put it on a flat piece of paper, Greenland is too big and Ecuador is too small. You know, I mean, it's all wildly distorted. So it's more or less impossible to actually get the experience. So I guess in terms of how we did it, he came to the planetarium, saw our previous shows, saw what we had done. And then, we had roughly, and this part I think Michael will probably end up talking about, we had roughly ideas about how long each cue should be. The show is pretty much continuous with music. The cues blend into one another. But of course, there are different scenes. And the reason I say roughly is because and a planetarium show is not like a movie in many, many ways. But one of them is that our performances are live. And so they're more like theatrical experiences, but to a set visual track. So when I was the director on the show as well as the producer, when I'm making a show like that, it's not always that in contrast to the way movies are, it's not that the shots are done and now he has to score it. The music is integrated up front. We want this flight through the galaxy to feel like this. Here are some dailies so he can see what it looks like. But, you know, sometimes the music, we'd let the music drive it. Okay, we want that cue to be 1 minute and 52 seconds. And so we'll stretch the video from 1 minute and 48 seconds to 1 minute and 52 seconds just to give us that moment to let the music resolve. You know, in other words, the music is right up there with the script and the visuals and the performance in equal partnership to create this combined experience.
It's really remarkable. I think it's one of the closest collaborations I've ever had as a film composer because of that. And what was sort of the daunting task for me, you know, in thinking about normal film composing and how that normally happens, I found it very daunting because I had the visuals that were set, but then we also had the Zeiss projector doing the star field, and that was not running in exact sync with the visuals. And so it would do its projections and everything, but it was on a different time clock. And then you have the actors that are doing the narration and telling the story, but their performances are different each time. And there's many, many different actors that do the show. And so they all perform it very differently. So there was all these balls in the air. There were all these variables every time. And so the music had to have a certain kind of softness and forgivability in terms of how it matched with everything to allow everything to sort of come together no matter what the scenario was.
The way Dr. Danley describes it is it reminds me of either it's a voice cast ensemble recording or, you know, Kevin Conroy sitting in a booth alone talking to himself. Yeah, it sounds like it was a very large undertaking, but with the music, it sounds like it was something that could have been very daunting for you at the time, Michael.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was just very different. I'd just never done anything like it before, and that made it very exciting for me and challenging. And I have to say, I mean, when somebody comes to you and says, you know, we really need a little more time for the music to finish its phrase there. We're going to give you another 4 seconds for that. I mean, that's happened maybe twice in my career, you know, so far. And I don't expect it to ever happen again with digital, you know, video being what it is now. So I was like thrilled. And that happened many times with us.
Yeah, it was, as you can already tell from our enthusiasm about each other, it was just a heavenly collaboration. A planetarium show is an emotional experience, and that is actually its primary function. I think maybe sometimes people think it's like a lecture or you're going to go learn something. Our goal is not, you know, if you come away learning a thing or two, that's marvelous. But our goal is to give you an emotionally, impactful experience that make you feel what it means to be part of this glorious, beautiful universe. And of course, that's where music comes in so fundamentally, is its ability to carry and manipulate, if you want to go there, emotions. There was a scene, for example, when the universe ends, for real, down in the future, many billions and billions of years into the future, not because of some hokey prophecy, but just because of the expansion of the universe and the eventual death of all the stars in it. And, you know, that was a sad moment in the score.
So scary.
So I assume that is pretty much where track 15, The Universe Dies, comes in.
I didn't want to be subtle about it.
Well, I mean, you know, everything in the universe has its time. When time's up, time's up.
That's right. There's another moment when we fly into a black hole, and in a black hole, time comes to a stop. And so we fly in, the pace of the music slows down and to a stop, to a halt, and, you know, that sort of thing. So we used it to its fullest, and it was just a blast. Working with Michael was so fun. He got it instantaneously. He hit the nail right on the head for the emotion and the feeling for each scene. He brought so much dimension to it. And you asked earlier about what the experience for him might be going into the dome and seeing it in the dome. I can only tell you that for our production team, the first time we heard his cues, it was overwhelming for us. Yeah, and he just did a beautiful job.
Yeah, I mean, I've had this release for, I believe it got released last year, right, Michael?
I think
it wasn't
so.
This year.
It was
the end of, close to the end, middle of end of last year. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I got it, the first thing I did, I thought of emailing you, Michael, and then I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. So I emailed John Takis, who did the liner notes for it.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, and like I said before, it's the person I asked, John, how am I supposed to review, write, because originally it was going to be a written review. How am I supposed to write up a review of something I can't experience? And he said, just, you know, turn the thing on your headphones, turn it on full volume, sit back, read the liner notes, and just listen.
Yeah.
And he also said to, at one point, if you're done reading the liner notes, start from the beginning, start from track one, turn it all the way up on your headphones, close your eyes, sit back, and just imagine it. And I did that, and it was just amazing. The music just brought it to life. It was almost like I was there, even though obviously I couldn't see it.
That is so cool. That is really, yeah. That is a great, actually, tip for people that want to really experience the score, because the liner notes are extensive and wonderful, mm-hmm. and that's just great. I love that you did that.
Yeah. Well, I'm one of these people, and I think I told you this last time when we talked, when I talked to you and Lolita and Christopher, mm-hmm. I first have to, as I said a minute ago, I first have to see the, I have to hear the music in its context. So, you know, World's Finest, one of the greatest DC Animated Universe 3-part episodes ever, mm. with some of the best music ever, you know, of course, you know, I watch that and I hear the music as it's going through, and then I can, in order to write about just the music and bring it into context for people, when I originally wrote up my Superman the Animated Series disc release thing, again, I sat here and I just closed my eyes and I just listened to it, and I just let all the notes and all the cues just flow in and out of my ears, and I immerse myself in listening to the music, so I can pretty much memorize almost every note, to the point where I can sit here and, if I'm writing something up, I can sit here and say, okay, this part of the episode has this type of music in it, and it's, you know, a slow, steady decline, or it's a funny moment where, you know, and I know I'm talking about World's Finest here. I know we're supposed to be talking about Time's Up, but I'm just trying to explain this. You know, the scene where Harley's driving and Joker pulls up, ooh, you know, check out the cute hitchhiker, and just the notes for the Joker and the themes that you put into that. And it's like, I immerse myself into that. And this is the same thing I did with this. Because again, I was like, how am I supposed to envision this? How am I supposed to, because I wasn't able to, I didn't even know about the thing until the score even came out.
Well, I think if you experienced it that way and you had that kind of a strong connection, then we've done our job, Laura.
We've done
what we set out to do, which is awesome.
Absolutely. And the cool thing about the Time's Up score, folks, is it is technically about the end of the world, but it also, to me, is more about what's out there in the universe. That's just my personal take on it. And it has a lot of themes that, you know, feel like either planets coming into alignment or planets suddenly colliding and destroying each other at times. You know, like you guys mentioned earlier about the black hole track.
Right. Well, our first scene, and with apologies to our friends in Santa Monica, we destroy Santa Monica.
That's okay.
We actually went out to the beach, did a full, you know, 360 photography, and then brought it into Photoshop. Anyway, created the scene and then dropped all kinds of asteroids and earthquakes and tidal waves, and completely demolished, you know, in a grand style, you know, horror, what are those movies with destruction, you know, a disaster flick. Mm-hmm. And then said, wait a second, that's not going to happen. So, you know, we wound the clock back, but it was how we began. And so it was a very fun way to begin the show. And Michael's track to it was, you know, big and disastrous and wonderful. But of course, it is true that in order to explain what all this is about, we have to talk about what is time, which is such a heady concept. It was maybe our densest planetarium show from the standpoint that we just took on a really difficult topic. And so, again, the music was, you know, there when you needed it, and behind you when you needed to be sort of thinking about other things or trying to, understand think about the implications of what time is, you know, and how it moves and how change takes place. So yeah, there was a lot of physics in it, but you wouldn't really necessarily know it because you were carried along so easily by the score.
Oh no, I just was thinking to myself as you guys were talking about This is the first time I think I've ever written a theme for a law of nature. Or is that what that is technically?
Yeah, the second law of thermodynamics. Yeah, the love theme for the second law of thermodynamics.
It's that. It's totally that.
And because it's dealing with time and all of that, you know, on here you have tracks like Cycles of the Night Sky, you have Seasons in the Sun, you have Linear Time, what's the other one? Our Place in Time. And all of these tracks, listeners, just come together so well. Like, not only does the score obviously tell the story of the Planetarium show, but as I was saying earlier, if you're someone like me who can just immerse themselves in the music, like I said, I kind of felt like I was seeing the show, even though, you know, I can envision it based on your music, Michael. And I think that's really, really great. I did wish before I did start listening to it that, you know, I could have, I know it wouldn't do it justice, but I kind of wish there was some sort of film footage out there. But now,
I do want to say, I think, because we haven't actually explicitly said it, mm-hmm. the show is no longer playing.
Right.
After we survived the end of 2012, we played it for about another year and said everything in the past tense, you know, hey, look, we're still here. What a surprise. But then It just became too dated. So it is no longer playing. But there are two places that you can hear Michael's music. One is that we have an exhibit that was to honor the 25th anniversary of the Hubble telescope. And we had a montage of many spectacular Hubble images. And we chose music of Michael's to lie behind that on that exhibit. So he still lives here. And then we also play his music whenever we have a solar eclipse or a lunar eclipse or some celestial event on our live stream. We play his music so that people can still hear it.
Very cool.
That's awesome.
Obvious. And obviously, because I kind of have to do this, this is the La La Land Lounge after all. You can go over to lalalandrecords.com where soundtracks live and pick up the score yourself.
Oh, yeah.
There's that too. Now that the score is actually out there.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So, Dr. Danley, you are an astronomer. There we go. I finally got that word proper. What made you want to become an astronomer? When you were a kid, was there something about the night sky that really enthralled you or something like that?
You know, at the risk of sounding a little flaky, I think I was born to it. I just was fascinated by it from my earliest memories. Some of my earliest memories of dreams when I was a child, and I hate to say this, but in the crib, I remember being in the crib, and I remember having a dream flying around the solar system, I just had to know about it, had to go. And this was the early days of breaking into the space frontier, so I was absolutely part of that generation that just thought space was the coolest thing ever. So there was no question for me. I did have a little side bout with botany. And another actually lifelong affair with music, but in fact, astronomy won out as what I wanted to do for my career. So it was just always there, and I slogged through the work and the math, and got the degree, and so it was it's a certainly a passion.
What, since you are an astronomer, what are your thoughts on the whole Pluto thing?
Well, a dwarf tree is still a tree, and a dwarf planet is still a planet. So I will refer now and again to Pluto as a planet. I think it's kind of a non-issue. The fact is that Pluto is nothing like the other eight planets in our solar system, and a lot like thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions of other bodies out in the outer solar system. So if you had to, say which of these things is not like the other, Pluto was definitely different from the other planets and a whole lot like this whole other population of objects out there. So it just got moved into the proper category, and that category is referred to as dwarf planet, but it's still a planet.
Mm-hmm. Michael, what would be the next kind of project that, you know, I don't know if you guys can even talk about this, but what would be something that would bring you back to the Griffith Observatory? What would be something that you would be interested in scoring again? What kind of planetarium show would you want to really, really do?
Well, I can tell you right now that it wouldn't matter what kind of a show it was. The opportunity to work with Dr. Danley again would be just fantastic. So whatever she's doing, and if she wants me to do it, I'm on board. So,
well, draw up the contract, Mike.
No, we
both feel the same way, and indeed, as I've mentioned, we do have have a cycle where we go into production every couple of years, and so there isn't much to say about it yet, other than to say that we are in pre-production and development of a new show. Mm-hmm. And if you want to find out more about how you can support that through donations, because, you know, then you can become a member of Friends of the Observatory, which is our sister 501c3 membership and fundraising organization. Griffith Observatory, for those of you who don't know, is owned and operated by the Department of Recreation and Parks, the City of Los Angeles. So I'm a city employee, a civil servant. We don't raise money, but we have this marvelous sister organization, Friends of the Observatory. And so they're in the process of trying to raise some money so we can actually do a show and then pay Michael.
Yay.
Yay. So Laura, you said that the Time's Up show, you guys stopped doing that somewhere around 2013. What was there a show between that and whatever you have in production now?
There are three shows showing at Griffith Observatory right now. One is centered in the universe. It was our original flagship opening show, big budget, beautifully done. And then we did a show for our fifth grade school field trip program called Water is Life, and that also shows to the public. And then we did this crazy show. And again, the music degree or music interest and passion came in. But a show based on on Wagner's Ring Cycle, when the LA Opera did the Ring Cycle a couple of years ago. And that is scored 100% with music from Wagner's Ring Cycle, which I did. I had to do the editing and figure out what cue went with what. And, you know, if you know Wagner, you know that it darn well better not be arbitrary. Every note has meaning. So that was quite a lot of work, but a lot of fun. So those are the three that are showing now. And, you know, hey, if there's going to be another end of the world hoax coming up sometime in the future with the same kind of, public appeal that this last one did, you know, we may be able to bring it back and have it be relevant again.
I will say that when the first show that I saw when we were talking about working together was Light of the Valkyrie, which is the show that you mentioned about that was scored with Wagner. And you brought me into the dome and we saw that show. And I tell you, by the end of that show, I was in tears, literally in tears. I was so moved by the way the presentation had been done and just the visuals and the way the visuals and Wagner's music went together. I mean, I'm a Wagner fan anyway, so that one was an easy one, but the fact that it all went together in such a wonderful way, it was a fantastic kind of unusual thing to be able to work with a director and producer like Dr. Danley, who is also fluent in all sorts of musical language. Now, that's never needed for a film composer, and I don't require that at all, but it added this interesting dimension to the way that we would talk about the music and how it would integrate with everything. And I knew as soon as I saw that original show that she had done that this was going to be a special collaboration, because I could just tell by the way she was thinking about music and how it went with visuals and how it went with script that this was going to be something special.
All right, so I'm going to put you both on the spot. Pick a favorite track from the score for Time's Up. Well, Laura, you can go first.
Can I say a couple?
Sure.
My first thought that popped in my head was when we're watching all the evolution of the galaxy and supernovae are blowing up, and he has this magnificent score with lots of bass every time a supernova blows up, and it was just breathtaking. But there, the other that I just adore is after the universe has ended. We don't end the show there. There is a coda. And we come back to Earth, but 500 years into the future. And mm-hmm. we come back to Santa Monica, which is still in existence 500 years from now and still has a Ferris wheel, by the way, and drift up along Wilshire Boulevard and eventually make our way to Griffith Observatory in a different Los Angeles, one envisioned 500 years into the future. And that music, Michael, just chokes me up to this day when I hear it. It's so poignant, so beautiful, both hopeful but not overbearing. You can probably hear I'm getting choked up talking about it. It is an absolutely gorgeous cue. And so I think I would have to place that as the winner for me.
Would that be It's Up to Us?
I don't
know. The very last track.
Yeah,
before the alternate track, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. What about you, Michael? What was your favorite, as far as listen, like obviously you're the composer, you make the music, but what is your favorite one or favorite few to listen to from this?
I have a favorite. We've never talked about this.
I know.
So, this is interesting. I have a favorite cue, and it's because of the story. My favorite cue is Our Place in Time, number 14, because that cue is really when we see the Earth evolve to the point to where human beings become, you know, a species on the planet. And there's the way that they did the visuals with this. I hope I'm describing this well enough so people can understand. But there's this scene in the dome where you have a rotating Earth. It's rotating very slowly, but the music has sort of a phrase structure to it. And they did the visuals so that at every turn of the phrase, the Earth goes through another era. Is that the correct term, I guess?
Yeah, so, geological era.
Yeah, geological era. So we start like when the Earth is volcanic, and then eventually, you know, there's like this, it goes through all these different, you know, like Jurassic and all these kind of things. It's not that identifiable, but you get the idea that the Earth is evolving and you get to watch the Earth sort of evolve. And then there's this point at which it's some kind of a celestial body that contacts the Earth and creates this like spark, and that's when the narrator talks about the beginning of life on Earth. And I just thought that story and the way that it was presented was just so powerful, and that's my favorite track, because that's the track that takes us through the idea that the Earth was once, you know, not around, and then all of a sudden here life begins on Earth, and then human beings become a part of Earth. And I don't know, there's just something about the humanity of that I love.
Laura, you mentioned earlier that, you know, at the end of the show, the end of the story, they go back to Santa Monica 500 years in the future. And you said that they still have a Ferris wheel. All I can think of is, why didn't that roll down the street yet?
Oh, it did.
It did.
It did. It rolled down the street when it got destroyed.
Exactly what happened when Santa Monica was destroyed in the first scene. And I have to tell you, our show came before Sharknado. So I don't know.
There you go.
I got to tell you.
Let's see. Let's take a scale here. On the left-hand side, you got the Griffith Observatory and Time's Up. On the right-hand side, you got Sharknado. Yeah, I think Time's Up wins an award. Better, you know, I mean, come on now.
No, yeah, it came off its hinges and rolled up the pier and then tipped over on top of us in the planetarium show. There were also some flying monkeys right at the end.
Yes, wearing jeans, I believe.
They're little blue bellboy pants.
Yes, there you go.
Where's the Wicked Witch of the West when you really need her?
Yeah, well, that was the point. The whole thing is a farce.
Right.
So, yeah.
All right. What, Dr. Danley, can you tell us is currently, I know you already told us about the shows currently going on. What else is at the Griffith Observatory that if people are out in the Los Angeles area visiting, or if people live out there that have never been, what do you guys currently have going on?
Well, the main attraction of Griffith Observatory is to look through a telescope. That's why we were built, a gift of Griffith J. Griffith, who wanted to have a public observatory where everyone could look through a telescope and have the same kind of profound experience he had when he looked through a telescope. So that's our reason to be, and there are telescopes every clear night here. And right now in the sky, we've got Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn, so it's a fantastic time to do some sky gazing. On the first Friday of every month, and that's tomorrow, we do a monthly program called All Space Considered, where we talk about all the headlines, what's been happening in space, what's going to happen. So, for example, NASA has a probe arriving at Jupiter on the 4th of July. We'll have a special guest talking all about that. I have to warn you, though, if people are coming, they need to come early. It's a standing room only show, which makes us very proud, but it is a great deal of fun. And then, of course, there are planetarium shows, there are exhibits, there are guides, staff members to talk to, and lastly, the view, of course, could not be more beautiful, and it's a very romantic date night spot because you have the full view of the LA Basin all the way out to Catalina Island and beyond, so the ocean and the sunset, it really is, couldn't be prettier.
And Michael, you and your dynamic partners there,
yes,
have been killing the Joker this summer.
We have.
Oh boy.
Yeah, you're killing the Joker. I'm sure know that I work with Christopher Carter and Lolita Ritmanis.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely.
In a few weeks, we have the premiere for The Killing Joke coming up. That's absolutely true. And we've been working on quite a few other projects. I wish I could tell you about some of the other cool things that we have coming up, but stay tuned for November. Something that might be coming up in November or December of this year. I can't say what, but it's a really unusual project, and I think the fans will really love it. In the meantime, we've also been doing some concerts live of our film music. And in
particular, yeah, didn't you guys just take an international trip?
We did, and we're going to do another one too. We just got back from the Krakow International Film Music Festival a couple of weeks ago, where we did a concert of all of only our music with their youth orchestra. It was about an hour and 20 minute concert or so, maybe just over an hour's worth of concert, mm-hmm, where it was all music from Warner Brothers DC animated shows and all live. And it was just fantastic. We had a wonderful time and the audience was so responsive and the city itself is so supportive of film music. We had a fantastic experience there, and we're going to then do another one of these film music festivals, the Tenerife Film Music Festival in the Canary Islands, coming up in September, where we will repeat and expand upon the program that we did in Krakow. So that's coming up too.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
As far as the projects he can't talk about, folks, I'll get the secret information from him. Because I do know of a couple of... I know of Seven League members that's coming, so I do know about that.
Okay. Maybe you know more than I do.
Because I think that's common knowledge at this point because of Comic-Con coming up.
Well, we are still working on Avengers Assemble, and so that is, mm-hmm, you know, our Marvel series that we're doing that we're really happy about, and that's ongoing. And we have another series coming up in the fall that we're doing, which is a completely different thing than what we normally do, called Wacky Races. And it's based on the original Hanna-Barbera Wacky Races show from years and years ago, which a lot of people I know overseas remember because it was broadcast overseas at right after school and here also. So anyway, mm-hmm, we're going to do a reimagining of that one, and that should be very fun too.
Oh, I can't wait for that, because I do know recently, I believe it's DC. You said that was Warner Brothers, right?
It's Warner
Brothers. Hanna-Barbera, so DC. Well, yeah. I think Warner owns them, or
they
Warner
do.
Bought them at some point.
They do.
Anyway, DC Comics recently released, because they're bringing the Hanna-Barbera universe to the comics, and they recently released a comic for Wacky Races.
Oh.
I have not been able to read it yet, but so there is that. But yeah, no, I love Wacky Races.
That's so cool.
Muffy, stop polishing your medal and pay attention. Sassafras, fresh, fresh, red, rasterly. What's that? That's better.
I might actually close this episode with Muttley, just for the heck of it. Because I love me some Muttley. Oh, boy. All right. So, like I said, check out Dr. Laura Danley. Check out the Griffith Observatory. All the links will be in the episode posts. Where can the people interact with you all online if they so choose to do so? Dr. Danley, you can go first.
Oh, we welcome anyone who has anything they want to reach us. My personal handle on Twitter is All Space Considered. That's the name of our show. And you can just on Twitter look for All Space Considered. The handle itself is All Space Considered, with no vowels in the word.
Okay.
DRD, because we just ran out of letters. And
Twitter's like that.
Yeah. So, and then, of course, Griffith Observatory has both a Facebook and a Twitter feed as well. But for me, for the program, All Space Considered.
Awesome. What about you, Michael?
Well, we have our website at dynamicmusicpartners.com, and we're also on Facebook with an active page there and a Twitter feed as well, Dynamic Music Partners, only I think ours is Dyn Muse Partners or something like that.
Yeah. Twitter's crazy sometimes.
You'll find lots of resources there, and we try to post news items. We have some posts about our trips that we were talking about too, and things for people to see so they can keep in touch.
You know, I don't know. I should probably also mention Michael's music is on our YouTube channel. That exhibit with the Hubble images is actually, so that's just one cue. It gives you a sense of all of the other cues on the about a year ago for the Hubble 25th anniversary. So if you go to our YouTube channel, which is just Griffith Observatory on the YouTube channel, then you'll find it about a year ago. So,
and I think that's just music and visuals, right?
Which it is. Yeah,
that's really really
just
cool.
Music and pretty Hubble pictures and
So, well, they can see it a little bit in context in the context of space and those images and everything. That's really cool.
Does the Hubble ever not take pretty pictures? I mean, come on.
It
now.
Takes even more beautiful spectra. I'm a spectroscopist, so in my eyes, a spectrum is, as we used to say, worth 1,000 pictures.
That's right. All right, that's going to do it for this interview here on GeekCast Radio on the Inside the La La Land Lounge. Again, head on over to lalalandrecords.com, where soundtracks live, to check out the Time's Up score if you all would like to purchase that over there. I will have all the links that Dr. Danley and Michael have talked about. I'll have all those in the post so you guys can check all that stuff out. Coming up next inside the La La Land Lounge, well, by the time this interview goes up, it'll probably be after the 4th of July. So I think we're going to have Christmas in July here on Inside the La La Land Lounge. And I think we're going to talk about John Williams and how he left Kevin McAllister home alone. So
fun.
That's right. So stay tuned to GeekCast Radio, La La Land Lounge, all that good stuff. Unleash the geek in you, and we will catch you next time.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.